Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
In the years shortly after Jesus walked the earth, those first Christians were known as an incredibly generous group of people. The Bible tells us that they gave to the poor, they helped provide for each other, they even sold all they owned at times to make sure everybody's needs were met. And they're also a very close-knit bunch who allowed themselves to be accountable to each other for the way that they lived their lives. According to author James Brian Smith, the best churches today are the ones that still display those very qualities. We're continuing our series on the good and beautiful community. That's the title of James's book. Tonight, looking at the encouraging and generous communities. He's with us again. G'day, James.
G'day. Welcome. Thank you.
Encouraging. When we talk about that word, I mean, obviously we kind of think, I guess the first thing we often think of is, oh, okay, it's somebody who gets alongside us and, you know, listens to us and helps us and is non-judgmental. And all of that is true. In the book, you actually take it a step further, though, and say, this has to do with accountability as well. It's not just simply being there and listening and helping and putting the arm around the shoulder, but actually a little bit more of a dynamic process of keeping each other accountable to live out the Christian life. It's a pretty important distinction.
It is, and the word accountable or accountability is a pretty negative word. I debated even using that in the chapter because most people have had some bad experiences in one form or another with that. But I really do think it's a good word, so I stayed with it. But yeah, absolutely. I think any great endeavors that happen, it happened because somebody is, frankly, holding us accountable, is watching over us, is saying, here's some expectations for you to live up to. Because we need it. We just need the help. It's hard to live the Christian life. It's impossible on your own. And I think if we can find a community that will help us to become the person that we want to become, we're all better off. I mean, I want, for example, I don't want a boss at work who just says, "Hey, Jim, go do your thing." I mean, I may think I want that, but in reality, I benefit from having somebody who's watching and tracking and giving me guidance and encouraging me and correcting me if I need it. So I think life just works that way.
You've mentioned a couple of times over the last few weeks as we've been together about your Methodist background and John Wesley being the founder of the Methodist Church. He was very strong on this whole area of accountability, wasn't he? I mean, the whole classes that he put together, kind of small groups, it was the forerunner of the modern small group movement we have today. But small groups of people, no more than 12, getting together and really holding each other accountable. And boy, some of the questions that John Wesley got people to ask each other in those groups were pretty confronting questions, weren't they?
Very searching. In fact, I've tried to recreate that, and they are hard. I mean, you know, what sins have you committed since our last meeting? What temptations have you faced? Were you delivered? Did you give in? You know, I mean, that requires a lot of trust and transparency. It's very, very difficult. But yeah, Wesley, you know, that was a significant movement in its time. I mean, it turned England upside down because the church was dead and alcoholism was rampant and there was just no life going on. And Wesley, well, I mean, they were called Methodists because he had a method, and his method was to get groups of Christians together and be honest with each other and share their struggles, and it worked. Right. I think there's this real power in that accountability.
Now, today we find it a little bit difficult to, I guess, get this right. Sometimes we can fall to the kind of more legalistic end, so that then we've got people over us kind of almost being the critic on the shoulder, every wrong thing that we do, and bam, you know, we kind of got to put a foot wrong and somebody's kind of holding us accountable. Or on the other side, we react to that so much that we are really full of grace and full of freedom to the point where nobody is ever really encouraged to actually step up to the mark, to really be held accountable, to live radically for Jesus Christ as a Christian. How do we get the balance between those two kind of polarizing ends?
Well, I like how you described those are the two polarizing ends. There have been lots of abuses that we've seen historically and, like I said, in our own lives. And yet there's this other tendency to say, I just want to go my own way. I don't want any rules. I don't want anybody watching over me and all that sort of thing. I think it comes down to just a passion that happens when the Spirit ignites a desire inside of us to grow. And when you do that, you know, you step out and you want somebody to be accountable to you. I just, at the gym where I work out, they have this program that they run every holiday season. You pay them $25, and they weigh you every week through the holiday season. For us, you see, in Thanksgiving, we start late November and go through the first of the year, and most Americans usually gain a little weight because we're just eating tons. So, but what it is it says, look, we're just going to have a person here who's going to weigh you, and if you don't gain any weight, you get your $25 back. And essentially, you know, I was telling my wife about it. I said, I think I'm going to do it this year just because I want somebody that I have to answer to every week that's going to, you know, look at the scale with me and say, you know, up or down. I mean, I think it's that basic. And when you really want to change, when you have an inward desire to grow, you'll use just about any means you can to get there. And certainly works in the spiritual life.
Indeed. So for those people who actually want to do this, I mean, I guess we're talking about the person who wants to be held accountable rather than, say, the person who wants to hold somebody else accountable. So if we just look at it from that particular perspective on, what are some of the guidelines we can put into place in terms of finding an accountability partner?
I think you need to find somebody who really understands what this is about, someone who... I like the phrase Richard Foster uses, someone who lives under the cross, meaning that they know their own struggles and failures, and they're not going to be in a domineering position, but they're coming from a position of humility. So I encourage people to really pray about that and then you know, seek out a person and ask them if they would mind doing that. And it works best, I think, if it's mutual. If it's a, you know, I did that with Dallas Willard several years back. He and I would visit from time to time over some, we both laid out a several things that we wanted to do and areas we wanted to grow. And, you know, it was great. It was mutual. It was weird because it was Dallas Willard.
Yes.
He's a very famous, brilliant guy.
<right. laughs>
And I thought, he doesn't need any help, but he was willing to do that with me.
Yeah. Open House is what you're listening to. And we're talking about the good and beautiful community when Christian churches really flourish. Boy, they change lives. They really do. James Brian Smith is our guest. All right, the generous community then. When we're given an opportunity to give, some of us take the opportunity, some of us hold back, some of us do both. That's me. What are some of the things we tell ourselves to justify holding on to what we've got, to hold back from generosity, do you think, that can become kind of barriers for us being fully generous people?
Well, in my own experience, it has a lot to do with scarcity. I mean, it's a narrative that a lot of us hold, that whatever we have is ours. If we give it away, we have less, and therefore we have to do everything to hold on to what we have. And I think that's a dominant narrative that prevents generosity. I know it has in my own life.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other narratives of judgment. I think sometimes we think, well, there's that. I mean, I don't know if in Australia, but in America, we have a cliche: God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have that as well?
Yeah, and it's normally the first time we utter the word God. We use it to justify our lack of generosity.
Well, right, exactly. That's how it's used here in the United States as well. I mean, I hear people say that about homeless people or anybody in a condition of need. Well, God helps those who help themselves. And so that kind of judgment narrative and the scarcity narrative, and then there's the entitlement narrative that says, whatever I have is mine. I somehow have earned it. And I think all three of those narratives are just absolutely false. First of all, God helps those who help themselves. That's not in the Bible. It was Ben Franklin, one of the American revolutionary guys who coined that term, that little phrase. In fact, the opposite's true. God helps those who simply can't help themselves. The Bible's a who's who of utterly helpless people that God steps in and helps. And in terms of the scarcity narrative, if we would share, there's plenty to go around. I love the story in the Old Testament where the children of Israel are wandering and they get manna every morning, and they're commanded to take what was called an omer, which was a measuring device for the manna, because people were going out and hoarding all the manna, and there wasn't enough for everybody. But if they went and used this omer, which was, I don't know what it was, a quart or something, then no one knows the exact amount of what an omer was, but if everybody took an omer, that amount of manna, everybody had enough. And I think you know, there's not scarcity if we would just be willing to share.
Yes.
And then the entitlement narrative is also completely false. I mean, everything I have is a gift. I haven't earned. I mean, yes, I do a job and I get a paycheck, but you know, life is utterly gratuitous. I mean, the air I breathe, the sunshine, the fact that I am even able to work is a gift. So we're not entitled to anything. So I think those narratives have to be just taken on.
Yes. And when we think of generosity, we straight away think of money, but you've outlined about five different areas that we can actually be generous in our... It's a much more holistic concept in the Christian thinking.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about generosity, everybody really goes to finances and to money, but the truth is that we're stewards of a whole lot of resources, like our soul, our body, our talent, our time. I mean, those are the things that we have to give. For example, I'm really blessed in the fact that I can write. It's a gift from God. But the fact that I choose to use that for, I mean, the book we're talking about tonight was written over a year period, and I was up past midnight many nights. You know, I have a day job. Mm. It took a lot of effort to write that book, but I did it because that's a way that I am being a good steward of my own giftedness, because, you know, it may have but the potential to help somebody. So it's just a huge thing. Time is a huge thing. My son, for example, his love language is time. I don't know if you know that book, Love Languages, by Gary Chapman, Jacob really, you know, you don't need to give him gifts or give him praise, but when you spend time with him, it's huge. I just spent the weekend traveling with him. He's going to college next year, and so we went to California and looked at two colleges, and we got to spend, you know, 2.5 days together, and that time was really meaningful to him, I could tell.
Yeah.
And that's a resource that I have to give.
Yeah, all right. Well, give us some practical ways in that we can develop to be generous people.
Well, I mean, there's obvious, the obvious way is to give what we have, but the thing that I really discovered, particularly in studying about this, and by the way, I wrote this book with a community of people. We wrote it, there were 10 of us that met weekly and really worked through these things and shared our lives. And one of the things that stood out was you can't be generous unless you're first frugal.
Mm.
And by that, I mean, for example, most people tend to live right to the edge of their means financially, maybe beyond.
Mm.
So if somebody comes and says, hey, you need to give money to this charitable organization or whatever, that's going to require that I'm frugal because I don't have any excess to give. So I talk in the book about first being frugal with our other, like being really good with our time management allows me to have time to spend with my son.
Mm.
By being frugal with my finances allows me to have excess money to give when I see someone in need.
Yes.
So I think the first step is to become frugal. And I know that's a word that has some negative connotations to people. But doesn't mean being cheap. It just means being sort of thrifty with the way we manage our gifts.
Indeed, and in the way that we spend on ourselves. I mean, generally, we're more than happy to be very lavish on ourselves and then tend to be frugal with others. If we could swap that around a bit, be more frugal with ourselves and then be more generous to others. Because once you start giving, I mean, there's a real joy that comes. I mean, Jesus talked about, you know, it's more blessed to give than to receive, and there's a spiritual component to that. There's also an emotional component to that. I mean, you don't want to do it just to get the joy, but there certainly is a joyful quality about it.
Yeah, I think that's because we're being like God. I mean, God is, like I said earlier, utterly gratuitous. I mean, everything in this universe is a complete gift, and when we understand that, and we accept that's why we say grace before a meal, because as the rabbi said, if you don't say grace before a meal, you're stealing from God. I mean, because, you know, God handed you this thing and you took it and you didn't even give thanks.
Yeah.
But when you realize that everything is a gift, then it's much easier to give it away.
Yes,
I think.
Yes. Well, let's end on a story that you actually include in this particular chapter of the book about you helping a hungry bloke out, that you were actually kind of helping kind of begrudgingly and uncertainly because you weren't too sure whether he was actually taking you for a bit of a ride. But it turned out really beautifully. Tell us the story.
Well, you know, in the local church, there are people who do come and they want money, and it's not a legitimate need, and they lie. I mean, I hate to say that, but I didn't know that, and for the first year, I was kind of giving money to people, and then the senior pastor had to fill me in that's not always a good thing to do because people just take the money and so forth. But so I did learn that, you know, you don't give people money, but you. Like, if they want gas, you take them to the gas station, give them gas. If they want food, you take them to a restaurant. Well, I got a call one night, and I was in a meeting, and it was a young man who was very poor, and he was from another country, and he said, I haven't eaten in a couple of days, and could you please come help me? I've called several churches. No one will help. And I did not, as you mentioned, I was begrudging. I did not want to go. I had to go to a kind of a rough part of town at night. I was tired. It had been a long day. But, you know, this guy, there was something that seemed kind of genuine about him. So I did it and took him to a restaurant and watched him eat an enormous amount of food in about a half hour and took him back to his hotel. And he was staying in one of these little sort of temporary places. And, you know, even as I left, I wondered, was that good? I didn't know. I mean, did the guy have money and he just was trying to not use his own money? You don't know these things, right? I mean, that's the thing. So I went back and kind of forgot about it, and about 6 months later, he called, and he said, I just want to say thanks because, you know, I was in a bad place, and you kept me going, and I appreciate that. I want you to know I've gotten a job. Then I got a better job after that, and my girlfriend/fiance is coming over from this other country, and we're going to get married, and life's great, and just want to say thanks. And I hung up the phone, and what struck me was how, as you mentioned, I was not a cheerful giver. Mm-hmm. I was a reluctant giver, but God used that, you know. And so I think, yes, God loves a cheerful giver, and we want to be in that condition, but I think we still just need to practice the discipline of giving and being generous and trust that God will use it.
Yeah, indeed. And sometimes that means that we may well be taken advantage of, but maybe we're we should be wise, but maybe we're still being obedient even when we're not too sure if we are being taken advantage of.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's why it's great to give to charitable organizations that distribute the money, because they have systems in place to decipher whether or not a person is being legitimate with their need. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes, I mean, it's just hard to know, but I just think that we want to give as we can.
Indeed. All right, let's complete the series next week. Actually, you were talking about the worshiping community. We'll talk to you then, James.
All right, thank you.
James Brian Smith, author of The Good and Beautiful Community.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.